Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This monthly show airs the third Friday of each month and focuses on classical homeopathic treatment, how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. My name's Amy Lansky, and today's show is going to air for the first time on April 18th, 2008. Well, hello, everybody. It's actually March when I'm recording this, but it's April when you're listening to it. And in fact, it's right about when this airs, it's going to be just after the National Homeopathic Conference in Rhode Island. I'm looking forward to going to it. And in my May show, I'll report on it and tell you all about it. In the meantime, though, it's spring. I know here in California, I'm already, noticing all the plants are blooming and people are getting allergies. I myself used to have terrible spring allergies. I still have a little bit, but nothing compared to what I used to have. And all of that went away once I started being under homeopathic treatment. But anyway, there's lots of help for allergies in homeopathy. And a good place to just begin to get sort of acute relief is through various remedies that you can buy. And you can find out more about allergy treatment through the National Center for Homeopathy. You know, I encourage all of you to join the National Center. And if you do, you get their wonderful magazine, Homeopathy Today, which always has many articles about things like allergy treatment, flu treatment, and lots of other things as well. It's an excellent publication. So to find out more about the National Center, which really is the mothership of homeopathy in the United States, just go to nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. And they are also the organizers of the national conference that happens every year, this year in April in Rhode Island. Also, April is a big month for homeopathy in general, and that's kind of going to be the subject of today's show. April 10th was the birthday of the founder of homeopathy, Samuel Hahnemann, who was born April 10th, 1755. So, yes, it's been quite a while. Homeopathy has been around for at least 200 years, over 200 years. And April 10th is a day that homeopaths celebrate, the birthday of Hahnemann. And for that same reason, it is usually the week, too, that World Homeopathy Awareness takes place. And that's really the subject of today's show. We're going to have on Gabriel Traub, who is the founder of the World Homeopathy Awareness Organization, and it's putting on a World Homeopathy Awareness Week. So I'll get back to talking a little bit about Gabriel later and bring her on. But let's see what else I have to say. What else is going on? Well, obviously, it's also Easter and Passover time, being spring and all. Easter was early this year, Passover very late this year. In fact, the weekend when this airs is Passover, the beginning of Passover weekend. And it's a time of rebirth, of course, and all about freedom as well. That's really the message of Passover, is freedom. And really, freedom is the message of homeopathy, that it's possible to become free from disease with homeopathy. And just, in celebration of spring, of freedom, of these holidays, I thought I'd read this paragraph from Hahnemann's Organon that just reminded me of this freedom. In homeopathy, the goal of treatment is to be completely free of disease so that we can all live our lives to their fullest. And Hahnemann wrote it like this. This is paragraph 9 of the Organon, which is his treatise on homeopathy, which is still a textbook for all homeopaths till this day. And he writes, "In the healthy human state, the spirit-like force that enlivens the material organism as dynamis," and by the way, dynamis was Hahnemann's word for the vital force, "it governs without restriction and keeps all parts of the organism in admirable, harmonious, vital operation as regards both feelings and functions, so that our indwelling rational spirit can freely avail itself of this living, healthy instrument, for the higher purposes of our existence. So that's what homeopathy can offer people. Health so that they can fulfill the higher purpose of their existence, so they are not trapped in the situation of disease, trapped in the situation of just trying to cope with their day-to-day lives. And that's why I call this show There's Hope with Homeopathy. There's freedom possible with homeopathy. Okay, before I introduce Gabrielle, the business of every show, let you know that the show is based on my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. And I encourage all of you to buy and read it because it will really help you understand homeopathy. And many homeopaths require that their patients buy and read this book. So you can find out all about it at impossiblecure.com. And there you'll find a page about autism treatment, the annotated archives of this show, which I encourage you all to listen to past shows because this show is kind of like a short course based on the book. There's also the Cure Stories database. And you can find out how to order single copies or in bulk. And on the autism page, you'll also find referral lists to homeopaths. Feel free to anytime to send me an email at Lansky@impossiblecure.com, or you can also send it to alansky@autism1.org. Next month, for the May show, I plan to talk about the content of Chapter 10 of my book, which is discussion of the legal status of homeopathic practice in the United States, especially with a focus on the health freedom movement, which I myself have been active in. And this movement is trying to pass laws in each of the 50 states that allows homeopathic practitioners to practice freely. So I'll be talking about that, and I'll be encouraging you to get involved in these efforts as well. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest today, whose name is Gabrielle Traub, and she's really a delightful person. I've met her several times. First, let me start by telling you her website information. You can find out all about Gabrielle's practice as a homeopath at sandiegohomeopathy.com, so that's easy. And also the website, she's going to be talking about World Homeopathy Awareness Week. The website for that is worldhomeopathy.org. So Gabrielle is a classical homeopath practicing in the San Diego area. And she's originally from South Africa. She has a thriving pediatric practice and has found that children do respond wonderfully to homeopathy, which they do. And she has a special interest in children with special needs. Because she's found homeopathy to be especially beneficial to these sensitive children. After graduating from a 6-year homeopathic medical degree program in South Africa, Gabrielle first did some research and she conducted a double-blind clinical trial on anxiety and difficult concentration, which included working on ADD and ADHD. And then she went on to develop her skills in private practice by working in hospitals and rural clinics. She spent a number of years practicing at the prestigious Hale Clinic in London, which was opened by the Prince of Wales. And she taught at homeopathy at Regent's College. But then she finally came to California, where she has developed a busy practice, and she also teaches homeopathy. Gabrielle says that she finds working with autistic children a special gift because there's so much hope and potential, and even the smallest changes bring joy to the family. As she says, homeopathy works gently, building up the immune system. It's a slow process, but if you stick with it and don't give up, the results are nothing short of miraculous. And obviously, I do agree with her. So you can once again find out about Gabrielle's practice at San Diego Homeopathy or call 858-531-5279. Okay, so without further ado then, hold on, and I'm going to bring on Gabrielle.
Hi, Gabrielle. Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, welcome. And you know, I've already told the audience about World Homeopathy Awareness Week a little bit and about Hahnemann's birthday being in April. You know, as I told them, you are like the founder of this whole effort. So that's pretty exciting. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today.
Yeah, it's become very exciting. It's just snowballed and, you know, organizations around the world are all getting involved, and it's become a really big thing.
Yeah, we need it more now than ever, given things that are going on in the world. So first, I always ask everybody I have on my show, you know, how you got interested in homeopathy. Often it's an interesting story. So let us know about that in your case. How did you get into homeopathy?
Oh, wow. I've got some wonderful stories to share. Well, my brother, I had a brother born before me, and he actually had an allergic reaction to medication, and he died before I was born, shortly before.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I had my younger brother. He was also very, very sensitive to medication, and he had lots of allergies, and he had epilepsy. And so from a very young age, my mom realized that the classic orthodox medicine is not for him. So we started go to a homeopath when I was, you know, just 5 or 6 years old. I started seeing the homeopath instead of going to, you know, in addition to going to a regular doctor, but we would always use homeopathy first. So I was very, very lucky. And I actually had epilepsy as well, and homeopathy completely cured that for me. I was having very, very severe seizures, you know, more than a few a day. I was on Tegretol medication for that, and it really affected my ability to function.
Wow, you would never guess that.
I know, and that was quite a long time ago, and I took the homeopathic remedy I made was actually made from opium, and it had the most amazing effect on me. It just, you know, I literally slept for 48 hours, and I woke up, and the whole world was different. It was incredible. I've never had any seizures since, and my whole life has changed. My mind is sharper. You know, I went from being a very average student to being top in my class, you know, just from the homeopathy. It was amazing.
That's so heartening because, you know, as you know, seizures are very common also in the autism community.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's just such an – you're like an example of somebody who had a problem like that.
Absolutely. I've really been through it, you know, and been through the medical model, been through all the testing myself, and I know what that's like. It's very frustrating.
So no wonder you became a homeopath.
Exactly. There wasn't any other option for me.
And you're lucky that in South Africa it's probably more common. Was homeopathy more common there?
It is. South Africa is actually one of the British colonies, and we know that you know, in Britain that homeopathy is very popular. I was working at a clinic that was opened by the Prince of Wales when I worked in London. The royal family of London used homeopathy a lot. And in South Africa, it's very, very common. Homeopaths are given the same prestige and, you know, level of acceptance, you know, pretty much the same as medical doctors. And you go to your homeopath for everything. They're the first line of defense. They're the primary care doctors. So it was a little bit of a shock to my system when I came to California, when I came to the United States, when I realized how most people don't even know what homeopathy is. Most people confuse it with herbs or aromatherapy, and it's really not given the recognition that it is in many other countries around the world. And not only that, people don't know what it's capable of, so a lot of people miss out on the wonderful benefits.
Yeah. I bet that might have been an inspiration for you to start World Homeopathy Awareness Week.
Yes, it was, absolutely. You know, I've been lucky enough to practice homeopathy in quite a number of countries around the world. You can tell that I'm a little bit of an explorer at heart. And seeing what all, you know, everybody's doing in different countries is very, very exciting. Everybody was trying to pioneer on their own. All the homeopathic organizations were struggling on their own, trying to create awareness, trying to, you know, educate the public about what homeopathy is about. And it seems so futile. Why are we all trying to do this on our own? Let's join forces. Let's do something all together on an international level. Let's put aside any politics that we may have, because, you know, there's always politics and, you know, medicine and things like that. And let's work together and create something huge and fantastic and really share this with the world, because for me, this is what my whole life is about, is sharing this amazing gift. And it's really, you know, in the beginning, when I first brought about the idea, there was a lot of hesitancy, and I can completely understand that. It's a huge task to take on, but it's really taken off. And I'm so proud of everybody involved and what they've accomplished. It's gone far beyond what my expectations of it were. Not only are we involved in World Homeopathy Awareness, we really get involved in life events and crises that happen all around the world. When they had those earthquakes in Pakistan, for example, the World Homeopathic Awareness Organization in Pakistan got involved setting up relief camps and clinics for the poor, and they actually were awarded a humanitarian award for their efforts. And it seems like we really pull together during times of crisis and help each other in bringing homeopathy to everybody, because it belongs to everybody. It doesn't belong just to the elite, or, you know, it's something that could be so inexpensive for even the poorest people to utilize.
I was just thinking when you were saying that, how wonderful it would be if there was some alternate universe where we could have that in the United States. Like after Katrina, there were homeopaths who went down there to try to help, but just the thought of, like, being recognized by the government seems very impossible right now. But
there are wonderful organizations like Homeopaths Without Borders that do get involved in things like that. I think it's really up to every homeopath to be involved in relief work and to some level, don't you think?
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the organization of the World Homeopathy Awareness Week, and what, like, maybe tell us some of the countries that are involved and some examples of stuff that they do.
Okay, absolutely. Well, we are currently have almost 40 countries around the world. I mean, we have members in Armenia, Australia, Bangladesh, Belgium, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Brazil, Bulgaria, Canada, Colombia, Croatia, Denmark, Egypt. I mean, it's, you know, all over Europe. It's really, really huge. And there's a lot of room for creativity in how you can, bring about World Homeopathy Awareness Week in your country. The most common way of doing it is a lot of the homeopaths are giving free lectures, educational talks, educating the public about how to use homeopathy, what its indications are, when is it best for you. There have been homeopaths who've put on plays and productions, musicals, street fairs, decorated buses, and, I mean, people have been really, really creative. There have been banners across major highways. We've had people have fairs and, you know, make cakes and give away T-shirts. So it's very, very open to, you know, whatever, you know, works best for the creativity of the people involved. A lot of them are focused on teaching children, because you really want to teach children about homeopathy. I was taught at a very young age, and I really appreciate that. Going to Barnes & Noble's and their talk times and doing coloring in books and learning about all the different homeopathic remedies. So the extent and the variation is huge in the way that people have expressed, you know, teaching everybody about homeopathy.
It's so exciting. Tell us, like, what has gone on in the United States?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we have almost every state involved. Well, that's not true, but we're working our way there to many, many of the states involved. And I would say that the most popular things that are happening is homeopaths in every state are getting involved, going into health food stores and bookshops and giving lectures and teaching people about how homeopathy can help them. A lot of the examples that I mentioned before have been involved in the United States as well. I must say the homeopaths in the United States have been very, very involved and excited about World Homeopathy Awareness Week. The pharmaceutical companies have been very generous in donating homeopathic medicines to give away, because it's really nice to be able to experience something for free before you put any commitment into it. So giving away homeopathic remedies for common complaints like colds and flus and injuries and so forth. And people can actually take that home and try it, because we know that homeopathy is completely safe. All our medicines are FDA regulated, and it's a very, very gentle treatment.
You know, I actually just remembered that I think it was a couple years ago, the New Zealand effort, one of the things they did is they ordered something like 40 copies of my book and put it in all the libraries in New Zealand.
They did.
That was exciting for me.
Oh, it was very exciting. And I know that in Canada they made bookmarks and put them in the bookstores, and I'm sure that I believe that they had your book listed on their bookmarks.
Yeah, I have one of those bookmarks. It was nice for me, too.
You were definitely featured in World Homeopathy Awareness Week because you've created so many wonderful books.
So now let's talk about when it happens this year. Actually, I thought it was going to be before this first airs, this show, but I think it's going to be after this airs. So tell us about when it happens usually. I know we were discussing right before you got on, how it's moved around a bit, but when it happens and how people might get involved next year if they're interested.
Absolutely. Well, I'd first like to give you the website, and I'm going to repeat this website a few times so that people can get it down. It's worldhomeopathy.org, and the way you spell homeopathy is H-O-M-E-O-P-A-T-H-Y. That's worldhomeopathy.org. And on worldhomeopathy.org, they actually list all the countries involved, who to contact. And what a lot of the organizations have done is listed the events that are taking place in their country or attached them to a link on their website where you can actually view events taking place. Now, World Homeopathy Awareness Week is officially April 10th to the 16th. 16th marks Hahnemann's birthday. Dr. Hahnemann was the founder of homeopathy. In the United States, for this year, we weren't able to keep those dates, so we've moved it to April 24th to 30th. That's April 24th to 30th, 2008, just because we had a huge conference, the National Center of Homeopathy Conference, and it didn't work to coincide with the same date. And the theme for this year, every year we have a different theme. The theme for this year is homeopathy for optimum health in sports, which is really exciting because we know that we have wonderful homeopathic remedies that can treat sports injuries, like Arnica. They've actually done lots of double-blind clinical trials that have shown that Arnica is effective in treating swelling, inflammation, and sports injuries. And there's lots of sports people who are very supportive of homeopathy, like David Beckham. And I know I treat a lot of the San Diego Chargers, and I helped one of their wives to go through her pregnancy. And, you know, it's something that everybody can use and utilize, because at some point in our lives, we're always involved in sports. It can also be improving your performance, sports anxiety. The theme for this year is homeopathy in sports.
Cool. That's interesting. I don't even think I realized that, so
yeah. That's
great. So, I know you're involved in this whole worldwide homeopathy thing. I mean, how are you, what's your perspective on what's going on these days? I've spoken on the show about a little bit about the attacks on homeopathy in Britain and stuff. What's your perspective on the state of homeopathy and what's going on?
Okay. Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because homeopathy has actually received a lot of media attention of late. There's become a lot of exposure to homeopathy. People have become very interested in wanting to hear more. There seems to be a huge upsurge in the awareness and the of homeopathy. In together with that increased media attention, you're going to get more attacks. It goes alongside with each other. And I think that it's not a bad thing. It forces homeopaths to stick together, to improve our education, improve our level of standards. And we just need to stick to our ethics and our morals and our principles and keep fighting for what we believe in. And the attacks aren't necessarily a negative thing. I know that it's very, very scary for some homeopaths. I do not believe that homeopathy will ever be annihilated off this planet. It is here to stay. And the fact that we're getting more attacks means that more people are threatened by what we're doing and that we're becoming more powerful.
It just occurred to me, maybe it all began because of World Homeopathy Awareness.
You never know. A lot of changes have occurred since then. So.
That's true. I often wonder, too, it's, you know, allopathy is, you know, failing at some level. And so it's sort of a defensive, you know, attack because of feelings of inadequacy or something.
Absolutely. I always wonder who has the time to spend so much time attacking something that they don't really understand.
I know. I was trying, kind of getting involved in what they're doing to the Wikipedia page, and it's basically hopeless. I mean, it's a small group of people who are just hell-bent on just sort of taking things over, like on Wikipedia, so that nothing can really be done as far as what my investigations have turned up.
Very angry bunch of people in the world, I guess, who have nothing better to do with their time, you know. I think rather let's spend our time making a difference in the world and making it better than try to prove others that we don't know.
Right. You have to be positive. You can't fight with negativity.
Yeah.
I agree with that totally. So, you know, why don't we move on now? We can talk a little bit about your practice. We still have 10, 15 minutes, and so tell us about your practice. I know you've treated some children on the spectrum. Tell us about your practice in general and the kind of people you treat.
Okay. Well, I come from a medical background. In South Africa, we have to go through, you know, medical school training. And so one of the things I was looking for in the United States, because the regulations are so iffy, was to work in, you know, a doctor's office one day a week where I can have all the traditional blood tests done and investigations and so forth. So I have two practices. One's in a doctor's office with an OBGYN doctor and nurses, and it's a really nice practice. And other is in a much more peaceful environment, like a spa setting. And both practices are very different. The types of patients I see are primarily women and children. And I actually did double-blind clinical trials on thought interference, nervousness, anxiety, where I was treating a lot of attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, and so forth. And from then, there was just a natural progression into working more with behavioral children. And there has been such a rise and increase in the number of autism and autism spectrum children that I'm seeing more and more of those in my practice. Now, we don't really know why there is a rise. You probably have more ideas on that than I do. There's a number of very good possible reasons. However, homeopathy has been shown to be very, very effective. So there must be some kind of immune component in these children as well. And for me, it's such a joy to work with these children because, I mean, the changes that you see on even a month-to-month level are so heartwarming and so dramatic that it just brings so much joy to their parents' faces. And if we have some time, I'd like to read you one case of a child, and you can see how, of course, it's very important to give these children time. They set the pace for their treatment. We don't set the pace. We go according to their pace. But small little changes can be seen very dramatically and very quickly. And this is a case of Nicholas, who was a 5-year-old boy diagnosed with autism spectrum and cerebral palsy.
Gabrielle, can you just talk a teeny louder, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
This is a 5-year-old boy diagnosed with autism spectrum and cerebral palsy. He had chronic respiratory tract infection since 18 months. He had exhibited delayed speech, clumsiness, he didn't make eye contact, and he had a lot of digestive disturbances. He had severe constipation for up to 3 weeks at a time, which followed by episodes of diarrhea and vomiting in between. He had his adenoids removed, had had double pneumonia, chronic ear infections, and had tubes put in 3 different occasions. So you can see he had a lot of issues going on with him. He had many food allergies, and his mom had him on a dairy-free, gluten-free, casein-free, and soy-free diet. He had delayed development, gross and fine motor skills, speech and social skills from birth. He walks on his toes. When he first came to see me, he was very sick with diarrhea and vomiting. He was very timid, clingy, thin, and sickly looking. He ignores strangers. He was extremely pale, and you could see his veins showing through his skin. He was very weak, could barely lift his head up. He just lay on the floor, and he looked the color of my conic jacket. He was that pale. He's dull, listless, and had no desire to play with toys. He is in the 25th percentile for height, and he has a big pot belly. He would have screaming episodes and was vacant. In other words, he checked out. He had been put on lots of antibiotics, lots of ear infections, and he had tubes put in 3 different occasions in his ears. He had gotten over a double Pseudomonas infection. He could barely hold down water or food and was very tired. He was born with respiratory distress syndrome, bronchopulmonary dysplasia, a patent ductus arteriosus, septus, enterobacterial pneumonia, and he was anemic. He had surgery to open up his urethra. He was healthy until 18 months when he developed a rotavirus and an ear infection and needed antibiotics. I gave him a remedy called Zoliga daily, and within 24 hours, his vomiting and diarrhea stopped. He is back to being potty trained. Within a few days, he is calmer, happy, laughing again, more engaging, making eye contact. In just 6 weeks of taking the remedy, he is noticeably more talkative and engaging. His teachers have commented on the marked improvement in his interaction and vitality. He had an episode where he was irritable and had worms in his stool, and I gave him a remedy, Quercetina. But the biggest improvement has been in his increase in vitality, speech, development, and eye contact. At one point, he actually came to sit on my lap and asked me to read to him, which was phenomenal. His mom had never seen that. He's much more vital and engaging. And since using homeopathy a few years ago, he hasn't needed any antibiotics. And his mom feels that we'll soon be able to take away his autism label. But not every case is like this. But this is the potential of what homeopathy is capable. And Amy, you know all about that.
I do. I'm just curious. You know, a lot of parents come in. You know, in this community, taking all kinds of supplements and things. What do you do in those cases?
You know, as long as, you know, I am not that much of a purist. I don't really believe that the supplements, for the most part, will interfere with the homeopathic remedy. I haven't found that in my experience yet. And as long as they're not doing him any harm, I feel that that's okay. You know, a lot of these children have very sensitive digestive systems, so a lot of the supplements can be very aggravating to the digestive system. So as long as the supplements are pure and not causing any problems, I'm usually okay with that.
And what about chelation? This is a question that so many parents ask me. Should they do chelation?
It really depends on the age of the child. A lot of the traditional chelation therapies are very, very strong and not suitable for children. I found that what the homeopathic remedy can actually do is it does detoxification in itself. What it does is it stimulates the immune system, and as the immune system becomes stimulated, the body naturally wants to eliminate toxins that aren't healthy for the body. So a lot of my patients ask me about some of the traditional chelation therapies, and especially at a young age, I prefer not to do them.
Yeah, I always usually say give it homeopathy a try first, you know.
Absolutely.
So, and also, have you had any older autistic children come into you?
I have, and, you know, my approach for treating autism is this. I don't have any set remedies that treat autistic children. You know, autistic children, like any other children, are completely individualistic. They have their own personalities, They have their own little traits, and it's very much individualized type of treatment. So it doesn't matter what their age or what their diagnosis is. My approach is to treat them as individuals using the homeopathic constitutional method.
Right. Have you seen any use for isopathic remedies, like, you know, the vaccine remedies?
I don't personally have a lot of experience in using that. For me, if the constitutional remedy is well indicated, and as long as it's moving the case along and the child is progressing, then I usually stick to what I'm seeing at that moment in time. However, you know, I'm very much open to learning about new things, and I haven't ruled it off my list.
Right. I mean, it's interesting that in the case you spoke about, too, silica, which was indicated in this child, when you were telling it, I thought, oh, silica.
Yeah.
But also silica is a remedy that's known for correcting vaccine damage as well.
Absolutely.
So that's interesting. And I know of other silica cases, too. Mm-hmm. But as I always say, it's not necessarily the one for every autistic child.
No.
My son never took silica, for example.
Yeah.
Have you seen any common ingredients for success in the cases? You know, some cases are more successful than others, and some homeopaths have ideas about when they're able to be more successful, versus not. Is there anything that parents can do that you think maximizes chances for success?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people think if the cases are more severe, there's less chance of success, and that's not really the case. Sometimes the more severe cases are easier to treat just because we have a very clear picture of what's presenting. The symptoms are very obvious and clear. So if parents can really observe the children well, which I'm sure they're already doing, and relay that information to their practitioner without holding anything back, without having any embarrassment or fear about what they may find, just being completely honest with what they see, that can be very, very helpful. The other thing I'd like to comment on is it's important for a homeopath, for a patient to stick to one homeopath for at least 6 months to really, really get a chance to work with the patient and see the difference. I don't recommend switching from homeopath to homeopath if you have a connection. If the connection is there and you feel confident in the practitioner, it's better to stick to one person and really give it a try. Be patient and not use a lot of different modalities at the same time. I find it's best.
I know. I often say patience is the key, because it's often progress is slow. And so, you know, parents get very... You know, they want things to go very quickly, but sometimes it doesn't happen that way. Or sometimes it takes changes of remedies. You know, you have to experiment a little bit.
The other thing that is important to bear in mind is through the homeopathic treatment, you're going to have a little bit of a roller coaster ride in the beginning. You can have some really good days where you see so much change in the child, and then it feels like you're going backwards and forwards and backwards. And it's very important, instead of micromanaging the case and looking at it from a day-to-day level, to really look at it from a month-to-month level. And I like to use the teachers as their comments as a guide as well. As many people who observe the child and can see changes in the child, the better.
I've often found that, too, is that the teachers, they have a little bit more of a little bit more perspective, and teachers' observations are often the most incisive or the most important. I found that true for my kids, just even when they're well, too. If the teachers say something, I know there's something wrong. And if there's not, you know, they can really see things.
And that's not to say that the parents' information isn't useful. It's the most useful. But sometimes as parents, we emotionally attach to the outcome. And if we see any, you know, regression, we get very, very disappointed. So it's important to see this as a long-term treatment, as something that is absolutely so fundamental, so profound, and so powerful that occurs over a period of time, and we have to be patient, like you mentioned before.
Do you recommend treating the whole family? Did you find that helpful?
Oh, absolutely. If I can, it's always such a treat. I love treating the whole family, then you treating all the different family dynamics. Usually, families with autistic children focus on the child who's autistic, and then as soon as they see an improvement in that child, then everybody wants treatment, but they like to see, some improvement in the autistic child first.
Right. I think it can help so much, too, because the parents are, having such difficulty and so much anxiety that it helps so much.
Absolutely. And, so the parents can be balanced and relaxed and carefree and a little bit, well, at the same time being completely responsible. There's a fine balance in doing everything that you can with the child and not putting too much pressure on that child.
Right. So, we just have another minute. Is there anything more you'd like to say to parents of autistic kids? Any kind of message you'd like to give to this community?
Yeah, I'd just like to let them know that there is so much hope for that child. There is so much that they can do. And you should definitely try homeopathy. And not just try it, give it a full go. Because when I've seen patients use homeopathy, the results can be so wonderful and in a way that actually develops the personality and the spirituality and the whole development of the child. It's not just on one level, not just with the autism. So I really encourage you to try homeopathy, and because the results are absolutely amazing. Thank you so much, Amy.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being on. I found that so fascinating that you yourself, in a way, were saved by homeopathy as a child.
Yeah, isn't that great? And I am completely healthy and symptom-free. Amazing. And this has been years and years ago.
It was interesting. I started the show with paragraph 9 of the Organon about, becoming free so that you can fulfill the higher purpose of your existence. Sort of in celebration of spring. And this was like a perfect example of that, your story too. So, and you fulfilled the higher purpose of your existence.
I'm working at it.
World homeopathy awareness. So, okay, well, thank you again.
Thank you. It's a joy to be on your show.
Okay, if you hold on, I'm just going to pause and then I'll say goodbye.
Okay.
Hold on. Okay, well, that was really fun today with Gabrielle. That's about all I have time for today. And don't forget to check out ImpossibleCure.com and NationalCenterForHomeopathy.org. Gabrielle's practice site is SanDiegoHomeopathy.com. And the World Homeopathy Awareness Week is WorldHomeopathy.org. And then finally, there is a new Yahoo group about homeopathy for special needs children. It's called homeopathy-and-SN at Yahoo Groups. So it's homeopathy-and-SN at Yahoo Groups with hyphens in there. Okay, well, thanks. And don't forget, there really is hope with homeopathy.